The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7. Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz and Carter Bird.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're all doing well. Hope you all had a fantastic weekend. Man, we have got some stuff to talk about coming up here on the Monday edition of On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. Jacob Goins alongside Carter Bird for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. Carter, happy Monday, brother. How was your weekend?
It was good, man. It was good. It was good to do after the game. Bummer that Auburn lost the second one in a row.
Yeah.
Had you in the studio with me. First time we've done an after the game together.
Yeah, we got to air our immediate thoughts out about Auburn losing to West Virginia. We'll talk some more about it later on in the show, but here's kind of what the rundown looks like today. We're going to start the show with what happened yesterday in the NFL playoffs with the NFC and AFC championship games. We'll talk about that a little bit. Question of the day coming up as well. No Joey Blackwell today of Bama Central. He'll be joining us on Wednesday, so he's out today. We'll have him on Wednesday, so then that's when we'll talk about Auburn basketball and what happened over the weekend. We'll kind of look around the SEC, look around college basketball. The new AP poll is out today. Auburn is still ranked, believe it or not, they are ranked 25th, so their streak is still alive there. We'll talk about all of that.
Don't know how.
I don't either.
Did not expect that.
I don't either. Dropping two straight games. Not normally away to unranked teams, by the way, but hey, Auburn's still ranked, so we'll talk about that coming up in just a little bit as well. And then in hour number two, we'll talk the huge Auburn football recruiting weekend. It was about three times the size they were expecting, so we'll talk about that coming up in hour number two. And then at 3:30, we'll talk to Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network, get his thoughts on recruiting this weekend, get his thoughts on basketball, and everything else going on around Auburn Athletics. So great show on tap for you today. Phone lines are open. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. Your thoughts, comments, concerns on anything going on in the sports world, anything we're talking about, anything we haven't talked about that you'd like to bring up, give us a call, 334-321-1390. And like I said, we'll start with the NFL because yesterday, the games went kind of like I thought they were going to. When you talked about the matchups, we knew that the Eagles 49ers was not the sexy matchup. It wasn't the high-powered, exciting matchup. We thought it would be the more grinded-out sort of game, and then the Chiefs and Bengals would be the more high-flying, exciting game. Kind of went that way, right? Unfortunately, though, the NFC Championship game was extremely boring.
Yeah,
it was ruined. It was bad.
Let's be real.
Yeah, it did. It got ruined. And, you know, credit to the 49ers because they ended up playing their fourth string quarterback who got hurt, right? So coming into the game, the 49ers were playing their third string Brock Purdy quarterback, right? He was the third string. He was coming in, had taken them all the way to the NFC Championship game. He gets hurt in the first quarter, one of the very first drives of the game. He gets hurt, defensive end coming around, he's trying to throw the balls, messes up his elbow, he tries to come back out, can't throw, says he can't do it. So then, they bring in the fourth string quarterback. He plays for a little bit, well, he got hurt as well. And the 49ers were on the verge of having to go to Christian McCaffrey as their legit quarterback and just run a wildcat. They didn't have to do that. Brock Purdy came back in the second half, but all he did was hand the football off. He physically could not throw the ball, and yep. Philadelphia knew that. They took advantage, and it wasn't an exciting game. It was pretty boring, to be completely honest. Philadelphia wins. They beat the San Francisco 49ers 31-7. Jalen Hurts going to the Super Bowl. Is he representing Alabama or Oklahoma there, Carter? everybody's favorite conversation.
It's going to be both. I mean, let's be real. I as much as it makes me laugh how much Alabama fans have gotten upset and been out of shape by that discussion.
That's why I bring it up because I think it's hilarious. And either way, Jalen Hurts and the Philadelphia Eagles, who have really flown under the radar all year long. I talked about that on Friday when we talked about these games. They have really flown under the radar. Nobody's given them a ton of press and coverage, right? They're not a super exciting team outside of Philadelphia and Philadelphia fans, but they're really, really good. And unfortunately, this could have been a really fun matchup. It just wasn't because of all the injuries and everything that happened in this game. And San Francisco just never really had a chance after Brock Purdy went out. And so Philadelphia heading back to the Super Bowl. Of course, the last time they were there, they won it. So that's exciting for Philly fans. Everybody knows how crazy they are. I'm sure people saw the videos of downtown Philadelphia losing its mind last night and into this morning. So congratulations to the Philadelphia Eagles. Not a ton to talk about there. Besides the fact that the 49ers still made the best trade of the year with Christian McCaffrey, because they lost their very first game that they traded for him, and then after that, they won 13 games in a row before yesterday. So they won the biggest trade of the year in Christian McCaffrey. That team's going to be good. Got to figure out the quarterback situation, but the Philadelphia Eagles going to the Super Bowl. The big storyline was the AFC Championship game.
Yes.
Was the Kansas City Chiefs, Cincinnati Bengals, a game that has been won the last three times by Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals, all by a three-point margin. Kansas City flipped the script on them yesterday. They win by 23-20. Lots to break down in this matchup, Carter.
Yeah, I mean, you saw Mahomes play a really, really great game on one leg. With that ankle injury, he goes 29-43, 326, two touchdowns. He did that while his top receivers all got banged up in the game. And you saw, I mean, Tony, did Hardman get banged up? Who's the third one? I know Juju got banged up.
Juju
too.
Got banged up. Well, look, dude, they had three receivers go down, a corner go down. They had some other, like, it was crazy. And the 49ers did too. 49ers had injuries left and right? Talking about, you'd have Bosa who dropped down and was in and out of the game. But yeah, Patrick Mahomes coming in, that was the biggest storyline, was how healthy is his ankle, right? How much can he throw? How much can he run? And he was not the level of Patrick Mahomes that we've seen in the past, but he played pretty well given the ankle situation. And like you said, given all the injuries that happened during the game, and Kansas City still found a way to win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you look at this game. Marquez Valdez-Scantling went off for 116 yards. I don't think I had that one. I saw that one coming.
Former Packer, one that Aaron Rodgers ran off. So that's cool to see.
Did he run him? Well, I thought he was very, he always built him up. And
everybody's pretty much leaving because of Rodgers at this point. Which, by the way, there's reports that the Packers would prefer to move on from him. Did you see that this weekend?
I mean, I had heard the rumblings, and I'm not surprised by that, because they're going to try to trade him and get some sort of draft value. Packers are about to go in through a rebuilding period, buddy, that you have not lived through in your lifetime.
I don't want to talk about it. But yes, Mark Valdez-Scantling, he had a great game yesterday. He came up really, really big.
Kelsey played well with that back injury, which...
Yeah.
Was I just living under a rock last week when I heard that said Sunday morning? I was like, what? Kelsey might not play?
He was hurt, and they said he was questionable.
He hurt his back this week in practice and was questionable, but they had said he was going to play.
Yeah, I mean, there was no shot.
He was solid.
Yeah, he had a touchdown. Anytime touchdown score, easy money, Travis Kelsey.
Man, if that game didn't feel like the Bengals were going to win it, it really did. It just felt like it was setting up for Joe Burrow. Got the ball back with 2:30 left, a chance to go down and score. He hit a couple big throws.
A couple of big throws.
Yes.
Big throws. I mean, you have the one to you have the one to Higgins in the corner for the touchdown. You have the one to Jamar Chase on fourth down over the middle into double coverage where he just goes up and just says, I'm better than everybody else. This was a game, and if you remember, in the last three times that these teams have played, where Joe Burrow and the Bengals have won all three. The Bengals were trailing going into the fourth quarter. Here you go again. And here come the Bengals, right? Here they come. Joe Burrow, 2 minutes to go. Can't get it done. Lots of officiating questions in this game. This was a game. Now, look, before we get into the officiating stuff, because I know we're about to get into that, this was a 23-20 game. Cincinnati's defense did everything it was supposed to do. They held Kansas City to 23 points. You've heard me say before in professional football, if you can hold a team to 24 or less, you've done enough as a defense to give your team a chance to win. In my opinion, I truly believe that. Joe Burrow and this offense are too good. Kansas City's defense is good, don't get me wrong. But this offense is too good to only put up a 20-piece and expect to win. I mean, you got to put up more points than that.
Well, my takeaway from this game is maybe the Bengals finally understand that, hey, like, we need to keep investing in the offensive line.
Yes, that was a huge part of it.
Injuries to their offensive line.
It showed up.
Yeah. I mean, Joe Burrow was under siege the entire game. I mean, he was sacked 5 times, but there was a heck of a lot more pressure than that. I mean, he was hit. The quarterback hit stat, he was hit 12 times, 5 times by Chris Jones.
Yeah.
Chris Jones got after him.
They couldn't block him, and he was, like
you
said,
2 sacks. 3 tackles for loss, 5 quarterback hits.
Wow. Yeah, Burrow sacked 5 times, threw 2 interceptions, something that Burrow doesn't do a whole lot. One of them was a tip drill that was picked off. But again, it was still an interception, and it was an arm punt, that basically. But still, an interception, right? And so, again, for Joe Burrow to have T. Higgins, Ja'Marr Chase, all of those guys on that offense, yes, the offensive line woe showed up early in that game, and I think that's what prevented the Bengals from doing what they do, which is score first and score early, and that just sort of threw them out of their rhythm a little bit. And the Bengals only putting up 20 points on the road against Kansas City, you just can't expect to win with only 20 points. You just can't.
Yeah, I mean, something you notice when you look at this game is neither team could run the football.
No, they neither, couldn't.
Like, because I think you had, with the Bengals, that offensive line, it makes it more difficult for Joe Burrow to sit back there and make plays and put forth the game that Patrick Mahomes did that won this game and sent them to the Super Bowl. I mean, you look at Kansas City, they ran for 42 yards in the game on 2.1 yards per carry. That's not good enough. Jerick McKinnon had 4 carries for 1 yard.
Jeez. Yeah, not good. But you knew that was the game plan.
Pacheco is really good, by the way.
He is really good.
They, for whatever reason, aren't getting any push on that offensive line. He did have 5 catches for 59 yards. He also, I don't think I've ever seen somebody that looks like he's running harder when he has the ball in his hands. He looks like he is trying to hurt the ground with his feet.
Yeah, he's one of those backs that is a threat out of the backfield to catch the football and get big yards after contact.
They haven't used him like that all year. And then he finally, I mean, he gets 6 targets and he grabs 5 balls for 59 yards. From what I've seen from him all year, I think he's your bell cow back for Kansas City moving forward. Like, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, don't care. Ronald Jones, don't care. Jerick McKinnon's kind of like, he is kind of that catch the ball out of the backfield back, but he's getting a little older and he's had a couple significant injuries.
Yeah, and not that Tony Romo said anything great last night and that he had a great game commentary. There's a whole argument going on about that right now, but he did make one good point about how he believes that Kansas City in their week 13 matchup, I believe it was, with the Bengals. He said during the broadcast last night, I believe Kansas City held back and didn't show everything they had in that game because they knew they would be playing Cincinnati at some point in the playoffs. I think him, Pacheco, being part of the game plan last night could have been a scenario where Cincinnati wasn't expecting that.
Does that statement really make sense, though?
Yes and no.
When you look at, I mean, why would you try not to win that week 13 game? Like, it worked out seeding wise because the Bengals Bills game never got to get played, but like it could have drastically affected seeding. It was
it's a gamble.
The Bengals were winning that many games down the stretch.
Yeah. No, it's a gamble for sure.
But they're probably not the only team to do that.
I don't know
if there's validity to that. Because when you have that matchup, Bengals Chiefs in week 13, when you have those Chiefs, Bills, Bengals, Bills, and seeding is super important about whether you get to play a home playoff game or not. I'm not sure if this is week 16 and it's already set, sure. But week 13 is that's awfully early to say, hey, we're not going to show what we can do because we know we're going to see him in the playoffs again. You need to be trying to get the one seed. The one seed was more important this year than ever before because it's just the one seed that got that bye in the first week.
Yeah, and I don't think it was he was saying like they've held off 30 plays that the Bengals didn't know they were running. Maybe just a handful, right? There's a handful of, okay, if we don't necessarily need these right now, let's hold on to them, and then you have a couple of surprises. We've seen Auburn do that in the past. I mean, Auburn has done that, not with it playing them in the regular season versus postseason, but other teams do that, right? You don't show your full cards before you play somebody else. It happens. I just think that is a possibility here. But then,
when I look at the AFC standings, the way they ended, the Bengals ended up, a game and a half behind the Chiefs? The Bills ended up a half game behind the Chiefs? Like, week 13, to me, is entirely too early to be like, oh,
which is
like,
fair.
We're keeping things under wraps.
And maybe they didn't do that. Maybe they did show their whole playbook, and Cincinnati was just not able to get it all down and defend it all or whatever. But, you know, and what's crazy about that, too, is the fact that this was the Chiefs' fifth straight AFC championship game at home. That's insane when you really think about that. They have hosted their fifth straight AFC championship
game. Mahomes is, the second quarterback ever to start five straight home AFC or conference championship games, with Brady being the other one who did it seven times.
Right, with Tom Brady at
seven times.
Isn't that crazy?
It was something like this is, I think you got to go back to like 07 or something for the last championship weekend that didn't have either Rodgers or Brady involved.
It goes back a long, long time because those guys have obviously they've dominated for a long, long time. But hey, we got to get to our first break. When we come back, I want to talk the officiating yesterday and officiating overall. You guys know it's my favorite conversation to have. We'll talk about the officiating in the AFC Championship game yesterday. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Back inside the studio here at ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader for the Monday edition of On the Line. Jacob Goins and Carter Bird discussing the officiating last night, because this is everybody's favorite topic when officials are bad at their jobs. And yesterday, in the AFC Championship game, Chiefs-Bengals, there were some really bad instances for NFL officiating. There were bad officiating plays all over sports this weekend. Celtics-Lakers Saturday night, that's a prime example. Officiating yesterday in the AFC Championship game, that was a prime example. And again, it all comes back to, here's my take on this. Officials should be held accountable. They should. They should be held accountable. They should have press conferences. They should have explanations. They should have to talk about the game just like players, coaches, everybody else does. They are just as much a part of it as anybody else, and they showed that last night. They inserted themselves into the game last night and were a part of the outcome. Am I saying that everything that happened that the Bengals should have won because of all of that? Not necessarily. Because again, if you're Cincinnati and Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals, you should have scored more than 20 points if you expected to win this game. I stand on that. But there were some times last night where everybody was like, wait, what just happened? Wait, they made that call? Wait a minute. They played that play. The Cincinnati Bengals stopped them on third down, but they stopped it, and now they're going to give them another chance? What in the world happened last night, man?
Yeah, it was confusing. It was confusing. There are some moments that were, I mean, you can say that it happened on both sides, but, and maybe this is unfair of me, but it felt like more of them went against the Bengals. I mean, I think back to the 27-yard punt return to set the Chiefs up.
Mm-hmm.
There's a blatant block in the back that keeps the tackle from being made. And you're talking about, what, a 37-yard difference potentially? Like,
yeah.
If you back it up from the end of the punt like it had previously, there was a play like that. I mean, that changes the game. The Chiefs, even with the penalty at the end of the game, are not in range for field goal. They're throwing a Hail Mary, and we might get overtime with two great quarterbacks, which would have been a heck of a lot of fun.
Well, until you get into the NFL overtime rules, which are dumb.
Which are, they changed for the postseason this year.
They did, yes. But in general, they are. But yes, you're right. They did change it for the postseason. There was that call, or no call, I guess. There were a couple pass interference calls that I just didn't agree with on both sides. But there was one on the Bengals late where it's like, Mike okay,
Hilton.
Yeah.
Mike Hilton, where I didn't think there was much there.
Mm-mm. I didn't either.
And, I mean, it was interesting, man.
Yeah.
It really was.
I thought that
there were a few times where in key spots the Chiefs were fortunate and kind of got bailed out.
I have never seen a third down play happen, a team get the stop, both teams exit the field, and the special teams come out, and the officials say, oh, just kidding, we actually tried to stop that play. We need to do that again. And then the team converted it. The Chiefs converted the first down after that. Now, they end up getting the stop.
And they converted it on penalty.
Yeah, on penalty. I've never seen that in my life. Because and if you watch the whole video, they zoomed out. If you're looking at the play on TV, they zoomed all the way out. Back left corner, yes, an official comes in and starts waving his arms. Now, credit, the crowd was extremely loud in Kansas City. Did he blow his whistle? Probably, but you couldn't hear it. He came in, waved his arms about twice. He was still 20 yards away from the ball.
Was it a timeout? What? Why was it?
There was. It was. Oh,
I missed that part.
Timeout, or it may have been a timeout, or the play clock stopped or something. The clock was messed up. Like, the clock ran on an incomplete pass, I think is what it was. I think that may be. And if I'm wrong, I please let me know. But I'm pretty sure the clock was running on an incomplete pass on second down. And so he started to run in, and then he took about two steps, and Patrick Mahomes snapped the ball, and he said, all right, we'll just let it play out.
So I saw a lot of discussion about that instance, because I think Ja'Marr Chase had a tweet about it after the game, like 3 3rd and 9s or something was what he said. And people were responding to him and saying, well, it didn't change the game because you got the stop. And I get the premise of that statement, but like, it's time going off the clock. And I don't know how the Chiefs drive would have gone given an extra, minute 20.
Yeah. And think about the momentum
at the end of the game, but like, theoretically, you could have more time for Joe Burrow and them to do something at the very end of the game, which, by the way, I hate the pitchy woo-woo play on kick returns.
I have no idea why they did that. Why would just jump on it and give Joe Burrow a chance to win?
Because
right?
I hate that. And also, number 11, I haven't looked up who it is for the Bengals. What did dude think he was going to do? Break 75 tackles?
I don't know.
He ran to the sideline, didn't even look to pitch, and then fights off like two tackles and just like still is not looking to pitch.
Yeah.
And then finally at the very end, like as he's literally going to the ground, he just throws it up in the air and the Chiefs pick it up.
You knew they were going to
calm down.
Yeah.
But like,
you knew they were going to squib it.
Yes.
And so jump on it with about 2 seconds and you bring Joe Burrow, Joe Snow, Joe Scheisty on the field with Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, and let the offensive guys do their job, not the special teams guys. I'm with you, man.
I'm not saying you have to do the Dallas Cowboys play, but I don't want a 5'8", 181-pound receiver in Trent Taylor trying to fight off the entire kick cover unit for the Chiefs, which is what that play was. You saw Trenton Irwin, he picks the ball up, he runs a little bit right, and he turns and throws it across the field, and then there was like no plan. I don't know. I feel like I see teams do that all the time. I would rather get the quarterback on the field to me, especially a guy like Joe Burrow, where, yes, you may have better athletes, but he's an athletic enough guy that I think you can, if you start throwing the ball around, you can get him downfield with guys, get him the ball on one side of the field, and he can flip everything and throw it all the way to the other sideline and make that defense run a little bit more. And I'd rather have a couple 270-pound, 300-pound linemen on the field on the defensive side.
Right. Well, look, it was a long shot anyway, but I agree. I think the offense should have come on the field for that final play. But then you had the push out of bounds, right? You had the push out of bounds on Patrick Mahomes. It was the right call.
Yes.
It was the right call. It sucks, but it was the right call.
I don't know what Joseph Asaias, like, I know he gave his explanation after he was trying to get him moving backwards out of bounds so they could start the clock.
I mean, he's running full tilt, too, right?
But to me, he should have had the ability to see out of the corner of his eye. He has a corner who is literally both feet standing out of bounds, ready to, like, funnel Mahomes out of bounds. I just think it was an unnecessary risk.
Yeah.
And I'm shocked that he did not destroy his knee.
Oh,
it was close.
It was really, really close. Yeah, and hopefully he's okay. He was running full tilt, but at the very end, he pushed his hands out and pushed Mahomes. That's what got the penalty.
Yeah.
Kansas City wins 23-20. They're heading to the Super Bowl. We'll talk some Auburn basketball when we come back.
Jacob Goins and Carter Bird on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Monday edition of On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. Jacob Goins and Carter Bird with you on ESPN 106.7. Well, Carter, as you mentioned earlier, we had our chance on Saturday to give our thoughts on Auburn losing on the road at West Virginia. We did that on After the Game, but we have yet to do it here on our show On the Line. And so that's the conversation that we're about to have right now. We'd love to hear from you. What are your thoughts on Auburn's performance on the road at West Virginia on Saturday? Thoughts on the Big 12 taking it to the SEC in the SEC Big 12 Challenge and some of the other results around college basketball? We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. West Virginia beats Auburn 80-77. Tigers are down to 25th in the AP poll.
Pretty rough day to be a ranked team in the SEC Big 12 Challenge with, I mean, how many was it? It was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 ranked teams from the two conferences going down. Higher ranked team in Tennessee beating Texas being one of those. And then the ranked teams playing unranked teams, just two of them won.
Yeah.
And it was Kansas State and Kansas. How about that?
How about that?
Good for the state of Kansas.
Good for them. They needed it. Kansas needed it big time. They needed a bounce back desperately.
But Auburn, look, it's, you can't dig. And I've had the same criticism for Northwestern when I've watched them play. When you dig yourself really big holes, your margin of error goes away. And you have to be unbelievable the rest of the way. And Auburn showed a heck of a lot more fight in this game than they did Wednesday. Credit where credit is due. And that West Virginia team did cool off a little bit. They shot 55.6% in the first half, 42.9% from three, and went 12 of 13 at the line in the first half. So 92% there. Second half, 37%, still 46.2% from three because they went, Eric Stevenson went nuts. And 75% at the free throw line, 9 of 12. But Auburn shot 56% in the second half. They went 40% from three. And they went 80% at the line. And they climbed back. They scored 48 points in the second half of that game. Made it close. Had an opportunity late to win. But this is a product of the first half. You get inefficient guard play the entire game. You get Wendell Green going 1 of 5 from the field in the first half. 1 of 3 from three. One assist, four turnovers in the first half. That's not good enough. That is not good enough. You get KD Johnson going 0 for 3 in the first half, 1 of 2 at the free throw line, which I will say that is a frustrating thing for him because we know he's a good free throw shooter. And I don't know if it might be a product of the fact that he's not gotten to the free throw line over the last month and a half. Well, he's not shooting his free throws well right now. But I will say he played a good second half, and it was the best 20 minutes of basketball we've seen from KD Johnson in a calendar year. And so I will give him credit there because I have been extremely critical of him. But he has not shot his free throws well since really SEC play started. It has not been great. He also has only gotten to the free throw line, what? It's 16 times?
Very minimal.
Since SEC play started?
Yeah, very minimal. And we know that's one of the places where he can be a threat. That's where he is actually able to score.
He was probably getting to the line 4.5 times a game going into conference play. And since then, he gets to the line half a time, 0.75 times a game now.
Yeah, and side note, before I get into more of this Auburn West Virginia, did we happen to put a steak dinner or any type of a free round of golf on our picks on Friday for the SEC Big 12 Challenge? Did we put anything on that? Are you sure? I thought we did. I feel like...
What, did you barely win?
Yeah, I did, actually. And a win is a win. Doesn't matter if it's by 1 or 50. A win is a win, Carter.
What are the records?
Jack went 6-4. You went 7-3. I went 8-2. I missed Bama and Iowa State. Jack missed Bama. He picked Bama. He picked Arkansas, which we were very confused by.
You pick Mississippi State?
Yeah, you guys convinced me. Remember, because I said...
Because I remember you were not going to pick Mississippi State.
I wasn't going to. And then at the end, I said, okay, because you and Jack had pretty good arguments. And I said, all right, you guys have convinced me. I wrote it down. I promise I didn't cheat. I did. And I was like, all right, you guys convinced me. And I took Mississippi State. Didn't like it, but I did do it. And Jack also picked Kentucky and picked Auburn. You picked Bama, Kentucky, and Auburn. And I missed just Bama and Iowa State because I did say West Virginia was going to beat Auburn. And I picked Kansas. And you told me that was very brave of me to pick the number 9 team in the country. But I did it anyway, and they won. So I didn't know. I couldn't remember if you had you said you were going to give me anything for winning that. But there's your picks from Friday. But to get back to...
I'm glad you're really patting yourself on the back for this right now.
Thank you. I appreciate it. 1-0. We're going to start keeping track of this every week now, just for fun. But to get on back to West Virginia and Auburn, as you know, in this game, it was one of those where I knew it was going to be tough for Auburn to win based off of a couple of things. It was going to be tough for Auburn to win based off of how they were playing coming into the basketball game, coming off of the loss against Texas A&M, and going on the road to a very tough, very good West Virginia team who know they're not ranked, know their record may not show it, but they are a good basketball team. And there's a legitimate chance that West Virginia will be playing in March. They will be playing in the NCAA tournament if they continue to do what they are doing. And all of that combined, it was going to be tough for Auburn to win this game. And here's the thing, they had a chance to do it. They had a shot at the end of the game to send it to overtime. With as bad as they played in the first half defensively, with the questionable shot taking and questionable offense that they've ran these entire game, they had a chance to send it to overtime against West Virginia. It was a horrible Wendell Green shot, and he missed it, and Auburn loses 80-77. And here's the problem, Carter. This is two games in a row where Auburn has given up 45 points in the first half, and both times I have said Auburn is not good enough offensively to come back from that. They're just not, because they're giving up 45 points and they're not scoring anywhere near that 45 points in the first half. They are not good enough offensively to come back from that big of a hole. Yep. They're just not.
By the way, I just did some quick math over here on KD Johnson from the start of the season to now, really non-conference play, and then from conference play, I'm including the West Virginia game because since conference play started. Before SEC play started, he was getting to the line 3.25 times per game, and he was hitting 2.67 free throws per game. Since conference play has started, he
6.27?
No, 2.67.
Oh, my bad. Okay, sorry.
And then since conference play has started, he's getting to the line 1.67 times, so half.
Half, yeah.
And he is hitting 0.89 free throws. So he's he's hitting 53% of his free throws since conference play has started.
And there are not many of them, which is even worse, right? Not only has his percentage gone down, his shot percentage.
He was an 82% free throw shooter in non-conference play. He's a 53% free throw shooter since conference play has begun.
Which, you have to look at less attempts on that percentage, but that's a problem. That's part of the issue, is that he's getting to the free throw line less and less. And that is where KD Johnson can get points, because I promise you it's not consistently from behind the three-point arc. And I promise you it's not consistently in the lane when he runs into triple teams and runs into the trees and tries to throw it up above the branches and hopes that it goes in. That's not working either.
Where would Auburn have been in this game without Alan Flanagan's first half? He goes 3 of 5 from the field, 10 points, 4 of 5 at the free throw line. He gets to the free throw line 5 of your 8 times. You take 8 free throws, he has 5 of them. He hits 4 of your 5 free throws. He gets 3 boards. He only has 1 turnover. He leads you in rebounds. He leads you in points. Like, he gives you 10 points in the first half. And that is your leading scorer. Your next person is Jalen Williams with 6. If Alan Flanagan doesn't play good, the second half was not nearly as good for him. 1 of 4. 1 of 3 from 3. 3 turnovers. 1 rebound. But if Alan Flanagan doesn't give you a solid first half, Auburn got nothing. And also, why is Jalen Williams not shooting the ball more?
They're not giving it to him.
Because he had, for the game, he goes 7 for 11, 1 of 3 from 3, 3 of 4 from the field, 18 points, 5 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 turnover. He is your best player. Get him the ball. Let him shoot. He is your best three-point shooter. He is your best offensive threat. He needs more than 11 shots, especially when he's going 7 of 11 from the field. Get him the ball.
How is Jalen Williams supposed to shoot if Wendell Green and KD Johnson are taking all the shots? That's why. There's your reason. Jalen Williams shot 7 of 11, 1 of 3 from downtown. Wendell Green went 1 of 5 from deep. KD Johnson went 1 of 5 from deep. Wendell Green shot it 10 times as a point guard. That's too much. KD Johnson shot it 9 times as a guard. That's too much.
I don't mind Wendell Green taking 10 shots.
Can't make
just
2 of
them. As long as they are efficient. And it was not efficient. And I have that stat. He's 2 of 21 from 3 in Auburn's 5 losses.
Yeah, we talked about that
on
Saturday.
It's not good. It was 1 of 16 coming in. It went up because he went 1 of 5. But Jalen Williams needs more shots. Jani Broome needs more shots in a game like this. Jani Broome, despite at times I felt like he lost his cool and he wasn't as mentally tough as you would like, you cannot deny he won his matchup.
Yeah, he did.
He had 15.7 boards and 7 blocks.
Mm-hmm.
I believe he had 7 blocks. I'm incorrect. I think that was last game he had 7 blocks.
He only had 1
but
block
this
game.
He got to give you 15 points and 7 boards. I'll take that. He had 5 assists.
Which is great.
He was tied with the team lead in assists for the game.
As your starting center. That's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Your past 2 games, you can make the argument that your best passer has been Jalen Williams on Wednesday and then Jani Broome on Saturday.
Oh, see, that's another narrative that's just not good for this Auburn team. The fact that Jani Broome passes it more than anybody else. I mean, does anybody not see the issue with that? Like, that is a problem, right? A problem.
I will say, he does have some possessions where he needs to be within a certain radius of the basket. There's some possession, like he took a kind of fadeaway mid-range baseline, and you and I were sitting here when he shot it. As soon as it went left his hands, I go, "That's not your game."
Yeah,
where he missed it
when he backs down, does a couple dribbles, turn. It's such a slow turn and fade too. Like, well, the defender knows it's coming. They know
it. To me, it depends on where he catches the ball. You can tell sometimes he catches the ball too far away from the basket. And if he's going to go take his shot, it's just not his game.
No,
it's not his game.
If he's 15 to 18 feet and he's going to take that jumper, it's not going to go in more times than not. I'm just going to let you know.
I'll be honest. I don't necessarily hate the he gets the ball at the top of the key and nobody's on him and he takes a 3. I don't necessarily hate that. But I have not seen him make that contested mid-range fadeaway shot that we've seen him take a couple times.
See, I'm sort of the opposite. I don't think Jani Broome should be more than 15 feet away from the basket ever.
I mean, sometimes it just, like, it happens in the
floor. Well, high screens and stuff, but, like, rolling out of a high screen and Jani Broome standing on the three-point line, that's bad. There's no reason for him to be out there for more than a screen. Pick and roll or go set a screen somewhere else or get open under the basket. That's what Jani Broome has to do, and those things just aren't happening on the offensive end of the floor. And again, here we are talking about...
Somehow in this game, and I don't know how this is possible, Auburn loses this game by 3. And 3 players are positive in the plus minus. 3! Jani Broome is +8. Katie Johnson is +2. And Chris Moore is +2.
Sheesh. And that's not great. I mean, +2, you're barely right there.
Is a 0. Everybody else is in the negative. Mathematically, I don't know how that works.
I don't either. And again, you've all heard my argument about Trey Donaldson. He's the best point guard on this team, and he's sitting on the floor. He's the best guard on this team, and he's sitting on the bench.
I have some thoughts on Auburn's guards, and we can hit it after the break.
Yes, we can. We can talk about that. We'll also talk about one of the common denominators in every single Auburn loss is this. We'll talk about it when we come back. Give us a call, 334-321-1390. We'll wrap up hour number one on the other side.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Wrapping up our number one here on the Monday edition of On the Line, Jacob Goins and Carter Bird with you on ESPN 106.7. We talked about and sort of teased a little bit, and some of you may know what this is if you listened to After the Game on Saturday. There's been one common factor, one common denominator, if you will, of every single one of Auburn basketball's 5 losses this season. Every single team that has beaten Auburn in 2022 and 2023 has had a guard that has absolutely gone off against the Tigers. At least 25 points, and has just shredded them from deep. On Saturday, it was no different. It was Eric Stevenson, the guard for West Virginia. He played 38 minutes. He went 10 of 17 from the field. 7 of 10 from downtown. Shot 70% on 10 shots from 3. 4 of 5 from the free throw line. Had 6 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal, couple of turnovers, and 31 points against Auburn. That has happened every time that the Tigers have lost this season, Carter.
Yeah, and when you do the math on that, that means that you've got a player, I think it's 26, 27, 28, 30, and 31 is the highest scoring guard for the other team against Auburn this year. And when you look at that, that's like 28 points a game. 28 points a game by one guard on the other team, and that's how you are losing.
Which, and I've talked about this, Auburn, where does Auburn want to play? In the 60s. That's where Auburn wants to play. That's where they have their best chance to win, is a game that is played in the 60s. They're giving up almost half of that to one player in their losses.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at this West Virginia team, you had one other player in double figures in Jimmy Bell Jr. He had 15 points, 7 rebounds, 5 of 7 from the floor, efficient. Got to the line 5 times, hit all 5 of his shots. Outside of those two, I mean, that's 46 of their 80 points. Nobody else cracked, got higher than 9. Nobody else in double figures. And really, nobody else was that efficient with the exception of Kedrian Johnson.
2 of 3.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, I mean, he even goes to the free throw line. He has two of their 4 misses at the free throw line, interestingly enough. Now he had 6 assists and 2 turnovers. I mean, you'll take that out of your point guard. But something we talked about on Saturday, Eric Stevenson is the one guy Auburn should be familiar with on this West Virginia roster because he was at South Carolina last year. You played him last year. You played him and you beat him, and you saw that he could go off then. I mean, and you tried to get him in the transfer portal. And it feels like, and I said this, boy, doesn't he feel like the missing piece for Auburn.
What, a guy that can step outside and shoot and be confident enough to shoot and actually have the ability to knock it down consistently? Yeah, I think Auburn could really benefit from that.
Yeah, because Auburn doesn't have any shooters. And that is something that is a serious issue, that there is legitimate reason for criticism with Bruce Pearl, the fact that he did not address those flaws. I mean, it shows. By the way, South Carolina, at South Carolina last year, Eric Stevenson went for 25 5-4 against Auburn in the first matchup, and he went for 13-8-4 in the second matchup. So tougher game in the second one. I believe that was the South Carolina's last regular season game, and then of course he goes for 31-6-3 on Saturday. So he's a guy who Auburn knows can score and score in volume. He has, and he's going to make his impact on the boards. He's going to make his impact with assists. He's done all of it against Auburn.
And every time it's been a guard. It hasn't been a center. It hasn't been an Oscar Tshiebwe-type player. It hasn't been some power forward that's just outmanned everybody. It's been a guard. Every single time, it has been a guard who can dribble, get open, and can create his own shot, and can shoot the three ball. And I think that plays into a couple of things. I think it's lack of preparedness on this coaching staff, and I also think it's the inability to play high-level defense from the guards on Auburn's team. And I think that plays into what their play has been offensively and defensively so far in conference play.
Yeah.
And absolutely. I know this isn't a conference game, but it's right in the heart of it. So you basically include it.
This, well, what this does now is losing two in a row. And I mentioned this on Saturday, on after the game. Wednesday is now the biggest game of Auburn season. The biggest game of Auburn season, without a doubt. It's a Georgia team that beats you on the road. You get them at home. Crowd needs to be there. You need to win that game. Because if you do not, because I think that there is a legitimate, this is me speculating, despite Auburn having a veteran team, I think the chemistry in the locker room, I just think the locker room mentality is fragile. I think it's fragile. I that's just what I believe from what I've heard, from what I know. And if you don't win on Wednesday, then you're taking a three-game losing streak into Thompson Bowling against number 2 Tennessee on Saturday. You're not going to win that game if you're on a three-game losing streak. Then if you lose that, you're on the road at A&M. An A&M team that came into your place and outmanned you. Yes, they shot crazy from the field. Tyrese Radford went nuts. He went for 30 on you. But you're on the road. You're probably not going to win that game. Then we're talking about a five-game losing streak when Alabama rolls into Auburn or to Neville Arena. You can't feel good about that.
No, and we've talked about the schedule. It's brutal, man. The month of February starts on Wednesday, and it is brutal.
And then if you are at a six-game losing streak, what happens against Missouri?
What happens against Vanderbilt?
Yeah. All those games. They're tough.
Yeah, they're tough. Auburn's got 10 games left on this schedule.
I still want to talk about the guards. I still want to.
We can do that. We can do that. Hour number one is officially in the book. Stay tuned. Hour number two coming up.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader, online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Carter Bird.
You're on the line. You're on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika, sports leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're all doing well. Hope you all had a fantastic weekend, as it is a more of a dreary Monday afternoon here in the Auburn Opelika area. Hour number one of On the Line is officially in the books. You know what that means. Hour number two is officially underway right here on ESPN 106.7. If you missed any of hour number one, some really good conversation between Carter and I talking about the NFL playoffs that happened yesterday, some of the conversations surrounding the matchups and the games themselves with officiating, questionable calls, questionable decisions by some players, all that good stuff. We talked about about that. And also got into Auburn basketball a little bit and talked about their loss on the road at West Virginia on Saturday. We have more to talk about that. We'll get into that closer to the end of the show. But if you missed any of hour number one, be sure to go and find the podcast. You can find it at ESPNAU.com. Click on the podcast center and you can find a commercial free right after the show right there, or just search On the Line wherever you get your podcast. But coming up here in hour number two, we have got to talk about the massive success that this recruiting weekend was for Auburn and Hugh Freeze in football. We'll talk about that coming up in just a minute. It was huge. It was massive. Yeah. It was unbelievable. And we're going to talk about it in just a few minutes. Later on in this hour, we'll talk to Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. We'll get his thoughts on that, his thoughts on basketball and where this team goes moving forward as they get ready to take on Georgia on Wednesday. But until then, phone lines are open. Give us a call, 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. Carter, let's jump into it, man. We had Christian Clemente of Auburn 247 in here late last week talking about the big weekend that it was for Auburn football recruiting, and we asked him what the number he thought it was going to be, the amount of players that were going to be on campus. He told us a confirmed around 40, 45, expect around 70 or so.
See, I had heard a little bit more. I had heard it was going to be closer to 100.
Well, it may have changed. Well, we had him on Thursday, yeah, I believe. Yeah. So it continued to grow.
I knew it was going to be a huge weekend.
It was going to be a huge weekend. And let's say that the expectations did get up to 100. How about double that? How about 204?
Yep.
That's the amount of players that showed up on Saturday for Auburn and Auburn football. 204 players showed up. This time last year, you were telling me some of the numbers you heard.
You said you had heard 20.
I had saw 20.
I have heard from people that were reliably, from people I believe to be reliable, 17. I've heard as low as 13.
So to take an average, we'll say 17. We'll go high and say 17. Brian Harsin had 17 guys on this day last year. Hugh Freeze just pulled 204.
On the same weekend. So that this is part of the issue. Alabama had a junior day the same day as Auburn last year. And all the players went to Alabama. All of them did, for the most part. Because people, one, probably didn't know the coach that well or the staff that well at Auburn. Didn't like him. A multitude of reasons. Well, and the coaching staff hadn't been to their schools. The inroads had not been made there. The connections with their high school coaches had not been there. In a month and a half, 2 months, Hugh Freeze, they announced Junior Day. Alabama announced Junior Day the same time. And the Auburn pulls 204 guys on campus. How about that?
Something they were not expecting by any means.
Believable. They were unbelievable.
There's no doubt. It was unbelievable. And again, they were not expecting 204 guys. Talking with some people that were there, there were obviously over 100 people that showed up, players that showed up, that Auburn was not expecting to show up. And I asked the question with a couple of people I was talking to. I said, was it too much? I said, were there too many guys there? And they said, yes, but it was okay, right?
Yeah.
They were expecting anywhere between 70 and 100, sort of what we've been talking about. And when you get double that, that's a lot. I mean, think about the situation. You're playing in this 4 or 5 hour period. Yeah. You want to make sure you see everybody, make sure they feel welcome, feel special, talk to them, because we know how important that is. And all of a sudden, you have double what you were expecting. That's a lot, and that's a lot to take in. In a very short amount of time.
It's a lot of Jim and Nick's to get to the complex.
That is a lot of Jim and Nick's to get to the complex. That is exactly right. And that was my first question was, okay, well, did that put a damper on anything? And I don't think it did. From what I've heard, I don't think it did. Was it a little overwhelming?
I think it
probably
did for a guy or two.
Yes.
You saw the comments by Jamarian Burnett where he was like, oh, it was all right. There were just a lot of people. And part of it is you're starting to see out there that – I think Cadillac was under the weather and was not present.
Yep.
And he, I think, has a special relationship and affinity towards Cadillac Williams.
Well, I think
there is a connection there that is different than his connection with any other coach in America.
I think there's a lot of players like that.
And I think it bummed him out a little bit that Cadillac was not there, and I think that was what played a role in maybe him not feeling like it was his best visit of all time. I don't think it's anything to worry about. I believe Jamarian Burnett will end up being an Auburn Tiger. I believe that.
And hopefully Auburn is still pursuing him. I know they are, but I'm saying hopefully they almost go out of their way to make up for that, because it's almost like it's a good problem to have, right?
Mm-hmm.
You had scheduled, we'll say 100 just to make math easy, right? You had scheduled 100 guys that was going to be there, and you end up with double that. A, think about what that represents and what sort of message that sends in the state of Alabama, around the Southeastern Conference, and around college football. Last year, you had 17 guys show up on Junior Day, and the very next year, with a coach that's been there for less than 2 months, said, yeah, we just had 204 show up, double what we thought was going to be here. Think about the message that sends across the state in Tuscaloosa. Think about the message that sends around the SEC and college football. I guarantee there were some coaches that saw that number and said, oh boy. And they probably said some other words. They're like, uh-oh, need to start paying a little attention to what's going down in Auburn, Alabama, and Lee County.
Yeah.
Because things are happening right now with Auburn football. Now, we'll learn as the weeks and months go on how all of the visits went, who was here and who wants to be here, who just showed up because they had the invite or wanted to, whatever, right? We're going to learn all of that as time goes on. But, man, how impressive is that? How impressive is that for us to sit here and talk about 204 guys showed up to see Auburn and to talk Auburn football on Saturday?
Yeah, 100%, and it's enormous. And I think that Auburn made a great impression. I saw people being like, what the heck was the last guy doing if Hugh Freeze was able to do this in such a short period of time? This is just another reason. It's painting the picture of understanding the SEC, understanding Auburn, understanding that recruiting is the lifeblood of your program. Jimmy's and Joe's are everything. And it's the disconnect that there was with Brian Harsin. And there's no reason why Auburn should ever have a junior day where there's not at least 50,
that's the
70
number.
Players.
Yeah. That's the number I had was 50.
And the fact that they had 203, and it was way more than what was initially projected and expected. And the fact that you have, I believe, Keith Niebuhr on three, and Jeffrey Lee had a discussion on a podcast where Keith Niebuhr's talking about they're only hearing positive things from kids. Hugh Freeze is blowing people away. Nothing negative at all. I haven't heard anything. Heck, Keith Niebuhr apparently went as far as to say that he thinks that Hugh Freeze is Auburn's Dabo Swinney or Auburn's Kirby Smart. Wouldn't that be something?
It's a big statement. That's a really, really
statement.
Big statement to make, and I'm not
considering those two coaches have four national championships between the two of them.
Yeah,
at their two schools.
Yeah, that's a really, really look. That's a really big quote, and I don't think I'm going to that extent yet. That's a really, really big statement. It's a bold statement, but I'm not saying he's in the wrong either, because he has early, and we have early evidence to support that good things are happening at Auburn. There's no doubt. But we have evidence that good things are also to come for this Auburn football program, because Hugh Freeze is doing the right things early.
Something that is even more impressive, and I don't even think is really being talked about. There are some guys who couldn't make it on Saturday on Junior Day. I think the staff got a decent amount of guys here on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to talk about a disconnect between last staff and this staff? That thought never would have crossed the mind of the Brian Harsin staff.
Oh, you didn't show up today? Screw you. I don't want to. You're not a part of it. You didn't want to be here today on time when I wanted you here?
I believe it's either Deuce Spurlock, the Michigan linebacker that I think entered the portal after this year, or DeMario Tolan, one of the two of them. I know it was a linebacker in the last class, that had a name that started with a D. I forget which one.
Mm-hmm.
There's this famous story where it must have been at one of the games before the game when the coaching staff can actually take time and talk to recruits on the field. I've heard that Brian Harsin didn't know one of their names. Like, was saying the completely wrong name, like, nowhere close. And it was like, oh, I'm like a high-level recruit in this class at a position you need, and you don't know my name.
Don't they wear name tags?
Well, they got lanyards,
a lanyard that's got their name on it. Like,
yeah.
Are you serious, man? Like, isn't it wild? Isn't it wild? We've been doing this for 6 weeks now. And it never gets old, and it will not get old, because I think there's really high potential for what Auburn could become. Just the comparison of what was here versus what is here now. It's unbelievable.
The Alvin Henderson quotes about Hugh Freeze tell you everything you need to know. That he has not had a coach make that level of first impression with him. And he's a running back. He's the number one running back in the 25 class. And he's going to be a huge target for Auburn. And then also you look at the personal connection that he already has with Cadillac Williams. He's not in this next class. He's two classes from now. And he has basically said, whenever Cadillac wants me at Auburn, I will be here. That's all you need to know. Those two guys.
Effort goes a long way, my friend.
What Cadillac did as the interim coach, when I think more responsibility went on his plate and he had to step up everything he did, I think that was great for him from a maturing perspective as a coach, where now he knows that there is another level in the effort in recruiting and everything that he can do. And I think you're going to see him hit freaking home runs every year, and you're going to see the staff. It's going to permeate throughout the staff. Zach Etheridge was already doing it. The DB recruiting's been unbelievable since Zach Etheridge got on campus, and he did it in spite of Brian Harsin and that staff previously. Cannot wait to see what that looks like. And I think you've got a bunch of young, hungry guys on the staff. I've already heard phenomenal things about Jake Thornton. I've already heard phenomenal things about Josh Aldridge. I've already heard good things about Jeremy Garrett. I think these young guys on the staff are going to do such a great job, and they're going to follow the lead of Hugh Freeze. They're going to follow the lead of Cadillac Williams. They're going to follow the lead of Zach Etheridge, who's been here and done it. They're going to follow the lead of Weston McGriff, who's recruited well everywhere he's been, and he's a legitimate veteran on the staff.
Well, think about outside of football recruiting. Take an organization. Take a company. Take a family. How does everybody act? They act like the people above them. The leader of a business or a program or a family or a team, the leader's attitude and the leader's purpose and the leader's thoughts and actions are all reflected by everybody underneath them. Good, bad, not whatever. That's how this works. That's how the world works. That's how corporate America is. The people at the top, if they are connected with the people under them, they will all act as one. They will all act the same. They'll talk the same. They'll be the same. That is what's happening right now with Auburn football. Hugh Freeze came in with a high level of motivation, high level of determination, and effort. And everybody he has hired, or the ones that he retained, have all shown that they want to be a part of that, and it has reflected on every single person. We knew Cadillac was already that way, and I'm glad you brought that up, because remember when there were people making the argument that Cadillac should have gotten the head coaching job when Harsin was fired after the season? There were people making that argument, and that's something we talked about, was not right now. He's not ready yet.
I don't think he was ready the day he took over the job. I think that when all this responsibility got put on his plate, I think he matured a lot quickly.
Yeah. Because
he had not been a college coach for that long.
No.
And I think he is a heck of a lot closer today than he was 3-4 months ago.
Right.
And I think you're going to see him continue to pick things up from Hugh Freeze, learn from him. Hugh Freeze is probably going to put him in a position where he might be the guy after Hugh Freeze. I could see it.
Yeah, and
I very much could.
That's sort of where I was going. Cadillac is picking up those traits, those skills, those responsibilities, and those experiences to where he is becoming a head coach one day, whether it's at Auburn or somewhere else. I think Cadillac Williams will become, if he wants to be, I think he will become a head coach one day.
You know what says a lot to me about this junior day? Auburn had 5 4-star recruits on campus committed to other SEC schools.
Yeah, we talked about that last week. Yeah,
2 Georgia commits, an Alabama commit, and an LSU commit.
Mm-hmm. Something I brought up.
And if I'm LSU and I see a 4-star corner commit went to Auburn, knowing what Zach Etheridge has already done, I'm worried. I'm worried for all of these guys.
Yeah,
I very much am.
Oh, I would be too, and that's something I brought up last week, is it's impressive to see that Hugh Freeze and this staff, they're not worried. They don't care. So once you're committed to Alabama, come and give us a try. Come and take a look at us and see what we're doing down here, because you probably didn't get the chance to do that last time.
The group of linebackers Josh Aldridge got on campus in the 24 class.
Studs.
Unbelievable.
Studs.
Unbelievable, and that's why I'm encouraged. The fact that he's able to get all these guys on campus at his first junior day. Auburn's going to have more. Auburn's going to get more guys on campus. But I think you're going to see every position group start ticking up in recruiting, even DBs. Because I think it's going to be easier for Zach Etheridge to recruit to Hugh Freeze and Ron Roberts than it was for him to recruit to Brian Harsin and Jeff Schmedding.
Because they actually want those guys to come to Auburn and be on campus and see what's going on. I mean, it's just... I don't think we'll ever get out of this phase of comparing and contrasting, because it is so drastic. And this is just recruiting. This is 6 weeks in, brother. We haven't even seen this team play a down. We haven't even seen them step on the field yet.
In the last, I believe, 10 days, 5 of the top 19 players in the 25 class have also been on campus.
There you go.
How about that?
How about that? Isn't that wild? Isn't that wild that Auburn's able to actually get top players on campus and make an impression?
And 2 other 4-stars as well in the 25 class.
Unbelievable.
Heck, Seaborn, the Thompson quarterback, who's a 27 kid, he was on campus.
Everybody in this town knows who that is.
Oh, yeah.
That kid is a superstar, man. That kid can absolutely play. And that's just one of the 204 guys that were on campus this weekend for Auburn's junior day, over double of what they expected. Hugh Freeze and company, they're doing all right. They're putting in some work. We'll get to our first break here in hour number 2. What are your thoughts on Auburn pulling so many guys this weekend? What have you seen? What are your thoughts on everything? We'd love to hear from you and what you have to say. 334-321-1390. We'll talk more about it on the other side.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Let's get to the phone lines here on the Monday edition of On the Line. 334-321-1390. Ed, you're on the line. Welcome in.
Hey, guys. First off, I was going to say on basketball, you know, when you keep, you look back on things, you know, before they're even over. But when Auburn kind of, in my opinion, this is just me, all of a sudden things went wrong was when something happened with KD and he was benched early in the year. And since that time, they haven't been the same team. He hadn't been the same player, you know. But as far as people, hey, listen, I'm a big KD fan. I'm a fan of every guy on that team, you know. And as far as people, you know, Wendell did some bad things, but I don't know if y'all, when I played basketball, you know, goodness gracious, if a coach, and this, you know, I'll tell you how old I am, there wasn't a 3-point line then.
Mm-hmm.
And I was small in high school, so, you know, but I could shoot it, you know.
Yeah.
But if I had a coach begging me to shoot, I would have shot.
Absolutely.
It seems like Auburn's got the Ben Simmons syndrome, you know. We're just going to pass. We're going to pass. And I think some guys on the team are getting getting a little frustrated. And I'm not taking up for any bad play or, you know, anything like that. But I have noticed that you know, I don't know. I wish none of us still know what happened with KD, but he hadn't been the player this year, you know, that he was. But it ain't just, I'm not, That might have been because he was chastised for jumping on some other guys or something, you know, that wasn't doing right. I'm not in any way, you know, saying he was wrong. I just think there's something, you know, and as far as getting pushed around this and that, you know, I see a lot of guys come into Auburn, you know, and they leave with pretty much the same stature they came in there. I don't know that Auburn puts as much, you know, Bruce Pearl and the whole program into getting a physical team. We ain't got to have, we don't have to have, you know, a Zion Williamson. Excuse me.
Yeah. No, I understand.
But you've got to build some bulk. You've got to know who you're going up against. And when you've got, sometimes a guy like Wendell, that is a great fit. But that is not the rule of thumb, and that's what Auburn has depended on too long. You need a, and for goodness sakes, Bruce Pearl, I love the guy. Recruit somebody who can shoot.
Yes, you know, preach agreed. It. Preach it, Ed. We'll print that and put that on a T-shirt, man. Get somebody that can shoot the basketball, man.
Absolutely, and it's not afraid to dang do it, man.
That's right. Okay. You know, Ed, on that point, it seems like there's a couple of guys that are definitely not afraid to shoot, and then everybody else that is afraid to shoot. It's one or the other. There's no in between.
Well, there's some guys who aren't afraid to shoot that maybe need to be more afraid to shoot. Like, Katie Johnson's been a 34%.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
He's 34% from the field this year, and he's 26.5% from three, and he's still shooting threes.
Yeah, and I agree with what you were talking about, Trey. If nothing else, give Trey Donaldson a chance and give Treyor. Give him a chance. You know, the guys that you've got in there are not doing it. You know,
the problem is Bruce doesn't have the confidence in Chance Westry or Yoan Treyor to even put him in the game right now, Ed. They haven't even touched the floor.
Well, I mean, there's a post by Justin Hokanson on Three today where it's a confidence, it's a confidence and maturity issue for Treyor, and I think we're looking at a redshirt season potentially for Chance Westry, and that's part of the issue there with those two guys.
Yeah, and you know, that's sad that it happened. You got two guys that you were depending on. But, hey, that happens.
Yeah,
you know,
it does.
That happens. But I still put Trey in. Do something, Bruce.
Yep.
Please
I'm
do
with
something.
You.
All right. Yep. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, appreciate your call, Ed. Always good to hear from you. That is Ed joining us here on the line, talking a little basketball, 334-321-1390. He's exactly right. I mean, there's a couple of guys that are definitely not afraid to shoot that should be, like you said, and then everybody else is scared to death to shoot the ball, and you beg them at times to do it. Trey Donaldson, Zepp Jasper, like, and not just shoot from outside, but be more aggressive on the offensive side of the floor. Zepp Jasper and Trey Donaldson could be a massive 1-2 punch as guards. They just don't have the aggressiveness, the assertiveness to do it on the offensive
end. You know what I don't understand? Freshman year at Georgia, Katie Johnson was a 42% field goal shooter, and he was a 38.7 three-point shooter. This year.
Was he shooting as much at Georgia? I don't remember. Probably.
He was shooting 3.9 threes a game. He's shooting 3.4 this year. Yeah. Last year he shot 4.6, but he dropped 9.7% from his freshman year to his sophomore year from three. He dropped 3.6% from the field from freshman year to sophomore year. Then from his sophomore year to his junior year, he's down 4.4% from the field, and he's down another 2.5% from three. He has had a 12% drop off in 3-point percentage from freshman to junior year.
He's just regressing.
And
I don't understand.
He has an 8% field goal shooting drop off from freshman year to junior year. It's frustrating, man.
Yeah,
it really
is. Well, look, we're gonna have some shirts made, and it's gonna say, "Please recruit somebody that can shoot." quoted Ed, and we're going to sell him for $24.99 apiece.
He was shooting 10.1 shots a game his freshman and sophomore year. And he's shooting less now and at a much worse clip.
Yeah, it just seems like
It's the same conference. It's a Power 6 high major conference, and he was a really good offensive player as a freshman. Right now, he's not.
No, he's not. And you just see him get ahead of himself a lot, make bad decisions, bad shots, and it's just it's confusing. It really is.
Similar kind of stat from his freshman year to now, Wendell Green is 8.9% worse from three. And 2.3% worse from the field. It's Eastern Kentucky to Auburn, so maybe that's part of it. But he's down 4% from last year on his three-point percentage.
Is that coaching?
I don't know. I don't know what it is. Yeah. I think it may be Jabari Smith's not here to take the attention away from the defense.
Yeah, interesting conversation. We got to get to a break. We'll talk to Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network when we come back.
Jacob Goins and Carter Bird on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 more minutes here on the Monday edition of On the Line. Jacob Goins, Carter Bird with you on ESPN 106.7. Getting to the phone lines where our Monday guest is Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. Jacob, happy Monday, brother. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about you guys?
We are doing fantastic. It's a Monday, a little dreary, but lots to talk about today. It's been very, very busy, and we will jump right into it. We'll start with what was a massive weekend in football recruiting as Hugh Freeze and company, they planned on having anywhere from 70 to 100 guys to going to be on campus. They were going to show them around, obviously do all the good stuff for recruiting, right? Well, 204 guys showed up instead, and a little bit more than they anticipated. What does that say right now about what Hugh Freeze and the staff have done in less than 2 months on the job?
Well, it shows the excitement and the optimism with prospects and recruits surrounding this football program and the positive things that Coach Freeze and the rest of the staff has really done in a short amount of time. And now that time is becoming less. It's not short anymore. He's established himself here at Auburn and inside the SEC as someone that's going to recruit really well. And like I said, just seeing that many recruits and prospects visit this weekend and it shows they showed that they had a good time and just being able to do that after the last few years where you haven't seen those kinds of stories on these kinds of weekends, it's been a little bit different these past few years than what we saw this past weekend. And I think something else is getting past this weekend. He said something, Coach Freeze did, about now being able to get to know the current team. I think that's a big deal as well. Is you get past this really big part of the recruiting process, and now he can start focusing on this upcoming season and the guys he has on his team now. And he hasn't been able to do that because he's had to been so locked in and really just focused on recruiting these past few months that he hasn't been able to do that like he would have. So I think this past weekend was just a big one as far as getting guys on campus and seeing what's being built around here, as well as moving towards this upcoming season.
Yeah, Jacob, last year at the first junior day of the year, Auburn had 17-20 guys on campus. This year you have 204. What does that tell you about what Hugh Freeze has just done in 2 months, the inroads that he's making, the relationships he is building in a short amount of time?
Well, something it shows me is that he realizes the deficiencies here on the team, maybe, that, you know, looking at the roster buildup and the loadout and what you got down the road, you've got to make sure that you bring in the best class possible here in 2023, which is almost done. You still got some work to do with that February 1st. Signing day coming up in just a couple of days, the official signing period that no one really recognizes anymore. But then in the coming years, 2024, 2025, those are the two classes that you really saw present here this weekend. Having those classes getting ready to build up to what could be special classes if Coach Freeze and that staff really, really get down to it. So I think that's what's so important is making sure that this roster starts to improve in every aspect as the years go on and you know, moving towards an SEC title contender.
Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. He joins us every Monday here on the show, sort of getting into basketball. Obviously, Auburn on the road on Saturday, coming off of the home Texas A&M loss. They lost their longest home winning streak in the country, right? Then they had to go and take on a very, very tough, underrated, in my opinion, West Virginia team in the SEC Big 12 Challenge. We've talked quite a bit about it, but your thoughts on Auburn's 80-77 loss in Morgantown?
Well, the first thing is, you know, how the guard, Eric Stevenson, what he did against Auburn, scoring 31 points. I don't know if that was his career high, season
high. It
is. Probably close to, yeah, career high. There you go. It's something that we've seen happen several times this season, whether it be G.G. Jackson from South Carolina mm-hmm. or Terry Roberts from Georgia or the guard from Memphis or the USC guards, where the guards have scored a lot on Auburn. But then you have the games like Arkansas where you limit it. That scoring from that team. And I don't know what it is that that Auburn can do to turn the switch where, all right, a guy doesn't go off for 30, but we've seen it in certain games, but we need to see it more consistently. Otherwise, it's going to be tough to stop these games. Now, with that being said, what I liked from this game, you had your highest scoring half of the season since Ole Miss and the second highest scoring half all season. I think the Washington game in the second half, you scored 50-something points. So you do have a positive second half, but it's still one of those things where every time Auburn got within one or two, you're not able to tie or take the lead. And I feel like in that game, had you been able to take the lead, I think that gives you a perfect opportunity to extend that lead and win that game and steal one after being down 16.5. But just unable to do that. You get within one several times, but just unable to tie it or take the lead. So that was something that I was really just, in my mind, I thought, take the lead, and you have a great chance to win this game. But mm-hmm. Auburn unable to do that on Saturday.
Jacob, when you look at the past two games, Auburn has built a 15 and a 16-point halftime deficit. What does Auburn have to do to, I guess, contain opposing offenses in the first half? What can they do better on the offensive end? Because when you dig a hole like that, you eliminate all room for error, and you have to be really good to win a game like that. This past week, it happened twice.
Yeah, you know what's interesting thing to me is that it's not an immediate deficit that Auburn's facing. Against Texas A&M, you start off up 10-2, and then the Aggies start figuring things out on offense. I think they were running a press that wasn't working, took that off. And in West Virginia, you didn't go down immediately, but it's just something about after those first few minutes that I think might be when the next rotation, the second rotation comes in, it's hard for this team to guard those scorers for the opposing team. I mentioned all those other guys who scored. Tyrese Radford obviously scored 30 for Texas A&M last Wednesday. It's just something where I think maybe you don't have the best. I mean, I don't want to say it's not the best game plan, but you go in with the plan, and I don't know whether there are any adjustments, because it felt like Tyrese Radford did the same thing every single time.
Mm-hmm.
Last Wednesday, he only shot the ball or made three threes, and that doesn't tell you someone scored 30 points, but he did because he had 11 free throws and just kept driving. You know, and then obviously it was a different story with Eric Stevenson. He made 7 threes. That's a guy you expect to score 30 points. So, and some of those, there's nothing you can do about. He made some tough threes that you can't really guard. But also, it just felt like sometimes he was still weak open that you really didn't expect it to. And he's also a guy you're familiar with. You've played him multiple times at South Carolina that past year. And I don't know. It's tough to get off to those to not let another team get off to a fast start. Like I said, I felt like Auburn's gotten off to decent starts. It's more so in the middle part of the first half and ending the first half where Auburn hasn't been very good.
Hillman, a conversation we've been having quite a bit is, where does this Auburn team go from here? You've dropped your last two games. As the month flips into February on Wednesday, you have Georgia at home, a team that that you've already lost to. Then you go on the road to number 2 Tennessee, on the road at Texas A&M, and home for number 4 Alabama. There's a legitimate chance that Auburn could be, if they don't play well, they could be on a 6-game losing streak before they come back home for Missouri. Where does this Auburn team go from here mentally, strategy-wise, everything, as they get ready for Georgia on Wednesday?
Right, the road does not get any easier here at the start of February, obviously. And I do think, like I said, I mentioned the second half against West Virginia being very positive on the offensive end. And even on the defensive end, you slow down the Mountaineers a little bit. So that's something that I think you have to use to your advantage. You have to use that momentum and take it into Wednesday. And I think Wednesday is such an important game because you want to go in and, one, the revenge factor off the team that gave you your first SEC loss of the season back in early January, but also knowing what lies ahead. Games at number 2 Tennessee, Texas A&M, you have to go there and play them again that next Wednesday. Then obviously Alabama comes to town after that Saturday. If you don't set the tone on Wednesday, who knows, like you said, what could happen past that point. And, you know, talking about that Tennessee game also, I just think this week is just so important where you can really set the tone for what goes on. So, for example, that Texas A&M team, you know, Auburn's 3-7 against the Aggies in its last 10 meetings. Whereas against Tennessee, you know, we've seen that streak has been pretty nice, and over the last 10, it's the opposite. It's 6-4, including a 6-game winning streak. So you really, really want to set the tone. And if you can pull off an upset in Knoxville, that changes the whole tone of things. But you've got to focus on Wednesday first. Wednesday, go in, win in your own home again, because the vibes are going to be weird after losing for the first time in 28 tries. And I just think you have to go with that revenge factor, take down Georgia, and from there, you just got to buckle down and for that road trip at Tennessee and at A&M.
When you look at this Georgia team, you had, I believe, last time out against them, Terry Roberts had 26, I believe. I mean, Auburn has allowed at least 25 points to at least 26 points to an opposing guard in every loss this season. How do you see Auburn responding against Georgia, coming off 2 losses, revenge factor, going against a pair of guards in Akindo and Terry Roberts that really tend to give Auburn some trouble in their careers?
Well, the good thing is that you do have that film. You have something to work off of. You can correct those mistakes. And I like what Auburn did after that Georgia game. You come home and play Arkansas that has 2 great guards in Anthony Black and Ricky Council IV. And you really – they still scored 23 and 14, but – it was in a different way where Auburn was in control of that game the whole time. I don't think trailed in that game. But running a zone defense the way it did against Arkansas, whether that's the answer, that may be. I don't know. But I think you have to try something different where the focus is not letting those guards drive to the lane and do what they want. Mm-hmm. Because, again, West Virginia, Stevenson was just – on fire from 3, and there's probably something you could do to try and stop that, but some of those 3s you weren't defending against. So it's more so about what Radford did. It's more so about what Roberts did, and the Memphis guard and the USC guard, where it feels like they just got to the lane at will and to the free throw line at will, and you can't let that happen again, especially on Wednesday and in the future when you're playing Santiago Vescovi, Mark Sears from Alabama, and then you'll be playing Radford again next Tuesday.
Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network joins us every Monday at 3:30 here on the Line. Outside of football and basketball, what's going on around Auburn athletics that everybody should know about?
Well, tonight, hey, women's basketball on a 2-game winning streak. Got a first SEC win against Ole Miss in overtime last Sunday, and then on Thursday got its first SEC road win in a couple of years at Kentucky. So hosting Florida tonight at 6 Central. You can hear that. Britt Bowen and Dr. Larry DeShera had the call at 5:45. And, hey, if you got nothing to do, let's go head over to Neville Arena. Tickets are available at aubtix.com. But also gymnastics got a win against NC State. It was the lowest score of the season for the Tigers, but no SUNY Leon IV, probably trying to pace her a little bit, getting ready for Alabama this weekend. So That's the big one. In Tuscaloosa, gymnastics will be looking to get a rivalry win there.
All right. Well, lots going on in the world of Auburn athletics. I know gymnastics is rocking and rolling. And, man, we're going to be hearing the ding of the bats in just a few weeks, huh?
Ooh, cannot wait. Hey, I can already hear whenever I walk out of the Coliseum, there's spring practice going on. It feels like all day over at Plainsman Park.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, we're looking forward to it, man. Obviously, you'll be joining us talking all things baseball as that season gets underway very shortly. But Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network, again, he joins us every Monday here on the show. Man, we appreciate you and your time. Let everybody know where they can keep up with you and everything you've got going on.
Yeah, follow me on Twitter at Jacob Hillman AU. Follow AU Sports Network for all the broadcast info and everything we got. Wednesday night, obviously, 5:30 on the air. For the Georgia game, Tiger Talk Thursday night at 6 Central, and then Saturday at Tennessee. That game's at 1 o'clock Central on the air at 12:30.
Good stuff, man. We appreciate you, brother. Have a good week. We'll talk to you next Monday.
All right, thank you, guys. War Eagle.
That is Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network joins us every Monday here on the Line. We'll take a break, come back, and wrap up the Monday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line. On ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Wrapping up the Monday edition of On the Line, big thank you to Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. Again, he joins us every Thursday, or every Monday, excuse me, at 3:30 here on...
Wow, you're trying to get to the weekend fast here, buddy.
Yes, I am. No, there is a lot going on around here this week, but not trying to get there just yet. But that, again, Jacob Hillman, he joins us every Monday here on the show. If you missed any of today's show, we're about to get to the phone lines. We're going to squeeze Terry in really quick before we get out of here. But if you missed any of today's show, be sure you go and check out the podcast. You can find it at ESPNAU.com. Click on the podcast center, find a commercial free right there after the show, or just search On the Line and you can get it wherever you get your podcast. But we'll get one more phone call in, 334-321-1390. Happy Monday, Terry. You're on the line.
Happy Monday, guys. What you phrase as though it comes is absolutely no surprise to me whatsoever.
Attaboy, Terry. Guys, let him know. Let him know.
I told you guys that would happen. He would be so grateful for the chance. He would bust his hump. The question I want to hear from these people that said, "Oh, I'll never pull for Auburn again if they hire Hugh Freeze."
Well, I mean, Terry, nobody actually believed that those people were actually going to do that.
I mean,
there's a prominent member of Auburn Twitter who said that, and then he said, "If Auburn hires Hugh Freeze, I'm out. I'm not rooting for him. I'm not going to any games." And then as soon as the hire was made, he backtracked it
immediately. Yeah. Well, I'm just that's what bothers me about it is the guy was clearly the best choice. The guy was clearly going to do the best job because he's going to work the hardest. Why would you say something like that?
Terry, I can't remember. Were you a big Hugh Freeze guy between Harsin and the hire? I couldn't remember.
Yes, a little bit.
Well, no, man. Look, it has been phenomenal to see what Hugh Freeze has done. And to be honest with you, Terry, I think he's doing more than anybody could have expected him to do.
You ain't seen nothing yet. Appreciate it, guys.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Terry. Good to hear from you as we get Terry in at the buzzer. Carter, you've had a take that you're trying to get in before we get out of here. And I do want you to get it in. So, it's a little basketball, right? Basketball?
Yes, it is basketball. I'm going to try to get it in. It comes from a tweet by our good buddy Jack Hudden. He said, "Look, I'll choose to be patient with this team still. Final Four team had very similar issues. Relied on the 3 too much and had a scoring threat that was too passive for the latter or in the beginning of the regular season and then until the latter half of the regular season." And then that team turned on a dime and he's basically in right the ship against Georgia. My counterpoint to that is I think that Auburn team, we knew had shooters. We knew it had a really quick, really fast, small guard that could see the court really well. This Auburn team does not have shooters. Yes, there is a comparison to the offensive struggles. Yes, they don't shoot the three well at times, and that Final Four team had some stretches where it wasn't great. But Auburn's guards on this team, you have four guards. Trey Donaldson, Wendell Green, Katie Johnson, and Zepp Jasper. They're all small. To be a small guard, I think you have to have elite quickness and speed or elite court vision or both. Of that group, how many of those guys, in your estimation, Jacob, have elite court vision?
One.
I'll say in the half court, I'll say one, and it's Trey.
It's Trey Donaldson.
In transition, Wendell has it.
Yes. In transition. I was going to say two, Trey Donaldson and Wendell in transition, yes.
But Wendell does not have it in the half court. He doesn't. How many of those guys have elite speed and quickness?
Two, maybe three.
I think it's zero.
Quickness?
I think zero. Elite quickness.
I'm not saying like effective quickness, but just straight up get up and down the floor. Yeah, there's a couple guys.
No, I look at the fact that because Jared Harper, as a small guard, he was the best small guard in the country the final 4 years.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying is he's able to beat that lengthy trap because he's so fast, he's so quick, and he had the court vision.
And he could also get to the rack and make the shot. That's a huge difference as well. Or could dish it out and make the right play. None of these guards can do that right now.
I don't think any of Auburn's guards you could look at to me and say they have elite speed and quickness. Javon McCormick had even better speed and quickness than Jared Harper in my estimation, and that's why he was able to be good. Mm-hmm. That's why he was able to be really good. Jared Harper had both. That's why he was great. I don't think any of you have flashes against teams that maybe aren't as bad of mismatches where you see Wendell play very well. But I don't think these guards, you know, Trey doesn't have it because he's 210 pounds and he's a former high school safety. Zepp does not have the elite speed and quickness. He's a good defender. KD absolutely, to me, does not have the elite speed and quickness. He has the hard-headedness that he's going to go to the rack.
And that's where I disagree. He has the quickness, but it's out of control. There's nothing good about it, right?
That's fine.
That's sort of what I was going
on. I'll accept that. But I don't think Wendell has it. I legitimately don't. No. I don't think he has it. And I think
and
that's
opposing
the flaw
teams
of this team.
Know it. They
Auburn,
know it.
And Auburn doesn't have the shooters, and they don't have. If you're going to have small guards, to me, to work in this system with the way that teams are starting to play Auburn, you have to have elite speed and quickness. Or elite court vision. Right now, I think Trey Donaldson's got really, really good court vision, but he doesn't have the speed and quickness. And then I think KD's the only other one that you can say in spurts, but it's not under control, and he has zero court vision.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those are the issues. That's why there are warts on this Auburn roster that I don't think were present on the Final Four team. Final Four team could get hot. They had the building blocks. You knew Bryce Brown could shoot. You knew Malik Dunbar was a solid three-point shooter. Anthony McMoore was a pretty good three-point shooter.
One bad.
Jared Harper was a pretty good three-point shooter. Auburn doesn't have any of that right now.
Auburn would kill to have...
Auburn has Jalen Williams.
Well, and here's a fun conversation right before we get out of here. Jack and I were hanging out Friday night talking right after the Auburn High School basketball game because I jumped on him on the broadcast with him. And we were talking about if you could pull one player in Auburn in the last 10 years, 5 years, anything, the one player to pull from an Auburn team to put on this year's squad to make them a contender, I'm pulling Bryce Brown because he can shoot the basketball.
I'm pulling Jared Harper.
I think either one is acceptable. I think either one's a good answer.
I'm pulling Jared Harper because I think he transforms the offense because of that speed and quickness and that court vision.
Harper gives you all of that. I think Brown gives you a little bit better shooting, but I think either one is good.
100%.
One of those guys would make this team at least a competitor, a contender.
I think last year's Auburn team is a Final Four team if Jared Harper's is at point guard.
I think so, too.
They were that good. And think about how nasty the pick and roll game with Walker Kessler would have been. It was great without a Walker Kessler. Would have been unbelievable.
And it was good last year with Wendell Green. Just think. Unbelievable. Those are what-if conversations. They're always fun to have, but we are out of time. Stay tuned. The Drive coming up with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. But come back tomorrow. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.